And when had that local been organized?
It was chartered in 1945. Something here for you. And it was chartered by 15 women. And there are their names. You may have that.
Great, thank you.
So unlike the other unions, our union was formed strictly by women. When I first came in, there was only one man on the executive board. The rest were all women. This is something, Sarah, that you will find interesting. This is January 26, 1946. And we were then called the stenographers, typists, bookkeepers, and assistants, Local 18177. That was before 45, when this charter was first established. And from what I can find out, the history of the local in our book and everything goes back to 1931. I also have one of our first agreements here, which is stenographers, typists, bookkeepers, and assistants. And it's our old agreement. You see, we were down in the Holden building, and there were only two pages. Our contracts in the beginning were only about these two pages. So I thought you might find that interesting.
Yes, I
did. Here's a photocopy. Oh my God, I haven't got page one. But you can see that the president was a lady.
Right.
And the secretary treasurer was a lady.
Was that because most of the people who worked in union offices were women?
It was the old, what did they call them? The Trades and Labor Council.
Right.
And the women who worked for the building trades unions.
So that was where Local 15 came out of, was
yes.
Those unions?
These 15 women in that charter worked for all the various unions, and most of them were one-person offices.
How did that union then move into the Canadian Congress of Labor Union? Did that happen after the merger in 1946?
No, it started in 1945. They were the AFL CIO, which I think was 1956, and this charter was under the old in 1945.
Yeah, that would be under the Trades and Labor Congress, but
yeah.
Do you know if they organized in unions like the IWA and I guess the Boilermakers and so on that were not in the Trades and Labor Congress before the merger?
They were, we didn't have an international union then.
Right.
It was, I don't know that much about it. It's before my time. I'm trying to get a hold of our first president and our first secretary treasurer and get some past history. Like here's 1944, for instance. Well, Bernadette's still around. She's not a member of our union, but she has a lot of this history that I need.
That would be great. Maybe I can meet
you. You can have that.
Mm-hmm.
She left our union and went to work for the Service Employees International Union. I don't know if whether she has a, I don't know whether she, I haven't approached her. I think she had a little bit of, would you close the tape off for a minute?
So, can you tell me about how you became involved with the OTU when you were working for the IWA?
Well, when I first started, I had joined the CCF. And like that was before it was the NDP. And my circle of friends were trade unionists. And I went to the BC Federation of Labor Convention as a visitor. And, you know, just really, I don't know very much about any other circles other than labor circles of friends. And my first a chore, I guess you would call it, when I joined the IWA was to find out about this OTEU. I didn't know anything about it. I joined it and I became the chairperson of the organizing committee, and we started a lot of organizing drives, and that was in May of 60 until September 62 when I left the IWA and came to work for my own local, and then at that time I was elected secretary treasurer. So that's it until up to and including today.
That's a long history.
It's a long time.
That's really exciting.
May 1960, I joined the union. When I left the IWA, I started working full-time for Local 15. It was September, on my birthday, September the 28th, 1962. And I've been elected to that position ever since.
Can you tell me about the organizing campaign?
The best one, the one that I think is most important in my lifetime, was the organizing Macmillan Bloedel in Port Alberni in 1964. And we had a lengthy strike in Alberni. There's part of the Macmillan Bloedel story here in 63, and it goes on to talk about OTU being certified. What you can have this. This is out of the Macmillan Bloedel story. Mm-hmm. And right there.
Okay.
You can have that for your notes.
Thank you.
That was really exciting because there were 60 people in that mill, and Bill Lowe, the first chap that introduced me to this local, he was in Seattle at the time, and I phoned him and said I had this organizing call, and the people in Port Alberni literally lined up to sign cards. I still have the signed cards, you know, because we still have. We had a terrible fight, a terrible strike, and nowhere would it have been successful except in the Alberni Valley, where all of the other unions supported us.
The people who you signed up, were they all office workers?
Oh, yes.
And can you describe what happened during the strike?
Well, the reason the strike carried on so long was Macmillan and Bloedel were not about to recognize the fact that the office people had a right to join a union. It was not appropriate for office workers to join a union. They were their potential management people, and they didn't want unions brainwashing them. They didn't. And J.B. Klein at that time, under no circumstances would he give us a union security clause where the people had to join the union. And it's only been in the last 5 years, I guess, since we were able to get the union security clause that said that as a condition of employment, they must join the union. We had the RAND formula, the maintenance of membership, where the employer said if we got down to less than 50%, that they would make the 49th, 50th person join the union. But that was, it made the strike last longer because we didn't want to sign a first agreement in the pulp industry without a full union security clause. And like I say, it has taken years to get that clause into that collective agreement.
So, can you tell us a bit about the story of the strike? Did people put up picket lines?
Oh, yes. We closed down the valley. So it's all recorded in the past history. There's a lot of it in that.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your role in the, when you left there?
I was the secretary treasurer. Mm-hmm. Collected the dues. I wrote all the receipts. I attended most of the meetings, not in Port Alberni, but group meetings and meetings in Nanaimo where the people were coming out to find out what we were going to do next, like through the Nanaimo Labor Council. And I wasn't in the forefront, but I was strictly in the background for all the telephone calls and everything, all strike pay and everything, all during the whole period. I did not lead the negotiations.
How long did the strike last?
It was, I don't know, it was 6 weeks, 7 weeks.
And when you say you shut the valley down, was that every mill in the valley?
Well, all of the pulp workers and the IWA respected our picket lines.
And were you successful in moving that clause at the time?
No, I think I mentioned that only in the last 5 years have we been able to negotiate a clause that states they must join the union.
So was the in your opinion, was the outcome of the strike successful?
Yes, because we were able to keep all of the people. We never ever got down where people were not joining the union. They were all quite happy to join the union. And we established rates and benefits for the people, and we still have them today, which proves that they're quite happy with Local 15.
In terms of the history of organizing at that period, were you organizing general offices and union offices at the same time?
We have not spent any time organizing union offices. That's not our major. It was never our major. I think some of the union fellows like to think that that's our major because they become the employer and we're the union. And anytime anybody mentions major negotiations, I refer to the freightway companies, the shipyards, anything other than the trade union offices, which you can understand. If we spent a lot of our time just organizing in the trade union office sector, we're neglecting the commercial aspect. See, Local 15 has 164 certifications. We're not like the other trades that have one contract. We negotiate every day. Like we have Noranda, wire rope, Neon Products, Scott Paper, Burrard Yarrows, which is now Versatile Pacific, and we have everybody from the filing clerks up to the top computer analyst, the draftsman, and lab technicians. We have the Utah Mines up in Port Hardy, and credit unions. So we have what we call freightway companies, commercial offices, credit unions, and the trade unions.
Have you found that the companies where there's other unionized workers are easier to organize than ones that are on?
I wouldn't say they're easier to organize. I would say they're more familiar with collective bargaining. Every unit that we've organized has been a struggle. None have come easy. Like when I started, we had 300 members, and now we have 2,000. So it's been steady. But if we have any spare time at all, there's always lots of organizing to do. But it's not easy to go out and find and concentrate on a group if they're not interested. You can't meet them and insist on them meeting with you. And hand billing helps sometimes, but most of our contacts we get through bad management, when people just get fed up, they phone in and say, you know, we want to have a meeting.
Has one of your jobs been to organize?
Oh, yes, right. I was chairperson of the organizing committee right from day one. And always, it's been a priority.
Can you share with us some of what you learned through organizing?
Well, I'm on the board of referees with the UIC, and I think what you can most learn about organizing is the difference between having a contract and not having a contract. There's a big difference in wages between union and non-union. But the people who are working without a contract, they have nothing. I mean, I just think office workers are so slow to work, and women especially, to go and work and not have a collective agreement or at least a contract. They go to work, they don't even know what they're going to be paid. They don't know when they're going to get their 3 weeks of vacation. They don't know when they're going to get a raise. There's no, in the office occupation, you're just at the mercy of the employer. And we have a big job to do. You know? I don't know what I've learned other than I just can't see why people would work without a contract.
How about, is it true then that most of the contracts that have been made for organizing have been people who come to you?
Well, I would say that strictly on the basis that people that are happy in their jobs don't go out seeking a union. So most of our organizing comes about by really bad management.
And then how do you work with the people once they've contacted you?
Well, we set up a committee and then hold a meeting and sign cards and take it from there. But there is still, even in this 1986, there's still a fear. There's a big, it's scary. They're afraid of being fired. They really, people don't know that they have a right to form a union without being fired.